here on our Sundays, light a chalice as a symbol of something our community are working together. And for a chalice lighting this morning, Charlie Kempthorne is going to read a poem. And I think I might like a couple kids to light the chalice. Might somebody do that? Come on.
Hi. It's my responsibility to read this poem. I'm Charlie. And this is by Charles Osgood. Some of you just watched him on CBS this morning. He's the narrator or host of that show. Job Responsibility, it's called. There was a most important job that needed to be done and no reason not to do it. There was absolutely none. But in vital matters such as this, the thing you have to ask is, who exactly will it be who will carry out the task? Anybody could have told you that everybody knew that this was something somebody would surely have to do. Nobody was unwilling. Anybody had the ability. But nobody believed that it was their responsibility. It seemed to be a job that anybody could have done if anybody thought he was supposed to be the one. But since everybody recognized that anybody could, everybody took for granted that somebody would. But nobody told anybody that we are aware of that he would be in charge of seeing it was taken care of. And nobody took it on himself to follow through and do what everybody thought that somebody would do. When what everybody needed so did not get done at all, everybody was complaining that somebody had dropped the ball. Anybody then could see it was an awful crying shame, and everybody looked around for somebody to blame. Somebody should have done the job, and everybody should have. But in the end, nobody did what anybody could have.
Thank you, girls. I now invite you to share major events in your lives so we may share in your joys and lend comfort in your sorrows. If you have a joy you want to share or a sorrow you want to share, please do so now.
I had this girl that I liked named Bree Girth, and we're engaged now. So, yeah. So, thank you. I've been waiting, but by the time I better not put it off any longer. So, there you go.
This coming Saturday, I get to host my first Reiki energy healing seminar for Bellis Academy, and then following, probably in somewhere one of the Wednesdays following, we're going to start doing Reiki shares of all practitioners, masters, and people that are interested at Hastings over by Hobby Lobby and all that.
Very cool.
It's my joy to announce that Amber and Drew Venom had their baby on Friday night. His name is Xavier. So I know they're very happy because they waited for a long time.
Good morning, Mike Bonilla here. This might be a joy to all of you that my wife and I, being the people in charge of coffee this morning, decided to start checking expiration dates on products in the refrigerator. The record was expired in January of 2005. So we decided rather than just pitch everything, we put things out on the counter, and if you're missing your sour cream dip that expired a year and a half ago, you may claim it before we throw it in the dumpster at the end of the service.
Molly McGoy. My son Nick wanted me to be sure and share that my cousin Jim and their dog Lander just came and visited us for the weekend, and we had a wonderful time. And last night when we got home from dinner at our house, there was this sound, and I looked at Melinda and I said, "That's the crowd, not a plane." Mm-hmm. She goes, "Oh, that's exciting." So we didn't go to the football game, but still exciting, you know, to be out and about and around town during that. So it was a nice visit, and Nick sure enjoys it.
Shirley Hobrock, membership chair. It's a joy to have a new member this morning, Angela Wary. Would you stand up? Let's welcome her. And Sabrina, did I mention you last week? Okay, and Sue Prey, did I mention you last week? Okay, those are two.
Jim Chanteau. Following Mike's announcement, I just wanted to say, I think I can break your record. My daughter Karen visited last fall, earlier this fall, and went through my cupboards to see what kind of ancient things she could find in there. And the record was 1998. Mm. And she looked at it and said, "Dad, Dad, Dad."
Last week, my baby twins, was it last week or the week before? They had surgery, and both of them are doing well. They're going to be 11 months old here on the 12th of December, so they're doing really good. They're in the nursery if anybody wants to go visit them.
Great. Excellent. We all hold all those joys, both spoken and unspoken, and sorrows, mostly unspoken this morning, in our hearts. Community is a wonderful thing. And now, if the kids, all the children, young in actual age or at heart, want to come on up, we're going to talk a little bit. Good morning, everybody. A lot of people here. It's great. All right. We are just going to have a little conversation, all right? Because one of the things that we're going to be talking about today, once you all leave, is we are going to be talking about responsibility. It's a kind of a big word. It's kind of a word. I don't know. When you hear the word responsibility, how do you feel? How many of you kind of go, "Oh, boy, really? Are we going to talk about something like that?" I'm getting some eye kind of movement that says, yeah, that's how I feel about it. Well, so that's all right. We're going to talk a little bit about responsibility. So I want to ask you all, I want some answers here. What is responsibility? What are examples of sort of somebody who behaves responsibly or behaving not responsibly? Can somebody give me examples of irresponsible behavior? What's irresponsible? Oh, I know you all have examples, because I know you all probably have seen other people behaving irresponsibly, right?
Not doing your homework.
Not doing your homework. What else?
Not doing what someone tells you to do.
Not doing what someone tells you to do. What else? There are a lot of not doings here.
Not listening to your mom.
Very irresponsible. Yeah. What other kinds of things are irresponsible?
Don't not listening to your teacher.
That too. Nick's got one.
Not telling the truth.
Oh, that's a good one.
What else? I bet you we can come up with more. How about
How about some responsible behavior?
Doing your homework?
Yeah, see, this is going to be really easy, isn't it?
Listening to people.
Nice. Telling the truth. What else?
Listening to your mom.
Excellent. So why is irresponsible behavior not good? What about it makes it bad? And what about responsible behavior makes it good?
Irresponsible behavior could get people angry at you.
Bad things could happen.
Is that what you're going to say? Oh, you just changed your mind. What other things? Why is... Oh, you forgot. Was that irresponsible of you to have forgotten, or is that just kind of okay? Yeah, I think it's okay. All right. I mean, what's bad about... Anything else bad about irresponsibility, about not being responsible? Why are we supposed to be responsible?
Someone could be counting on you for doing something, and if you don't do it, then it'd be bad.
You're going to be let down. I like that. Someone might be counting on you. I'm really glad you said that. We didn't plan this, but my last question I wanted to ask is, who might be counting on you for responsibility? Who are you responsible to, and what are you responsible to?
Teachers. Parents.
I.e. teachers.
R.E. teachers, yeah. Who else?
Friends.
Family.
I forgot.
Anybody else? How about anything?
Being good.
Yeah. Excellent. Come on down here, Jake.
Being respectful for your friend.
For your friends. And is it always have to be people? I want to ask this too. Do we have responsibility to any things?
Pets.
Oh, pets, that one too.
Like watering your plants.
Watering your plants. Do you have a responsibility to your plants?
Garden.
Gardens. What other things can you be responsible for?
Machinery.
Machinery. If you're taking care of it, absolutely.
Not losing something.
Being dead. Being dead.
Being good. All right. Excellent. Well, there are, you know what I love is how many different, we got one more.
Being good and being not being bad.
That's a perfect way to sum up this discussion. Being good and not being bad. Thank you. We have responsibility to all kinds of different things, right? To people. Some of them are our families, some of them are our friends, some of them are people who might be counting on us, and we, not even in our family or friends, and sometimes we have responsibility just to things, plants, pets, I don't know if you want to call them a thing or not, right? So they're sort of a kind of a person in our family, I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And plants and gardens and maybe the environment and all kinds of stuff. Well, when you all leave, we're going to have a lot more discussion about responsibility in different kinds of forms, and we're going to try for it not to be kind of one of these kind of conversations. But, you know, this is all cool. I love my family. I love my friends. I love my pet, right? People who are counting on me, there's a reason they're counting on me, right? I don't do a good job with plants and gardens. They tend to... Plants shouldn't count on me, but people generally can, right? But the reason we have responsibility is because they're things that we like. And so that's part of what the conversation we're going to be having today. So thanks for talking, and we will see you all later. Time for this morning's offering. What you give to the fellowship helps us help each other and helps us do the things that we think that we're responsible for doing for other people. So please give as you're able. I want to say one thing about the music. This is not the Kristen Diabel cover, but the original Nina Simone version that you're going to be listening to. great old song by Nina Simone. It's about obligation and responsibility in a way. Fulfilling promises made. Stay away from Rosalie. All right. Making new promises. To cook and sew. Creating obligations in order to keep her man. Now, these are not necessarily the sort of obligations that you and I might find most worthy. Right? For most of us, having somebody cook and sew for you is not a reason to stick around with someone, even if you like the fringe benefits. But they are obligations. And we organized the service today in order to work with the focus we've been having this year on identifying our values as a fellowship, as a community, as a group of people. Today we're talking about notions of responsibility, how our responsibilities line up with our values. Responsibilities are obligations, and as I was telling the kids, you know, when we think about obligations, a lot of times there are negative connotations to that. The word obligation doesn't usually make us feel great. And I think part of the reason for that is because of conflicts in what we actually value. Obligations come from many sources. I have work obligations, family obligations, church or fellowship obligations, community obligations, lots of obligations. So what makes an obligation an obligation? Why does an obligation have power over us? And I think this is where there's an interesting way to be thinking about obligations and responsibilities that I hope we're going to be able to engage in today. At least at some level, I think that when we call something an obligation, it's because we've assigned some sort of value, and a lot of times moral value or moral association with that thing. Right? We care about, for some reason, we care about or we think we ought to be meeting some sort of commitment. And it's clear that at least some of the times we think about what we ought to be doing, those are not the things we really want to be doing. Right? But that's actually a funny thing, at least from my perspective, as a philosopher who thinks about values sometimes. If you feel a sense of obligation, I think at least partly, it's because you value the commitments, right, that you made, that led you to make that obligation. If you value those commitments, if you actually care about them, right, if you care about your family or you care about your friends, right, and you want to act in ways that support your friends or your families, or then why wouldn't you want to meet those obligations? Why wouldn't it feel good? Perhaps it's because those times when we don't want to actually, we're not excited about meeting our obligations, it's because our values are not all in order. There are other things we want too. And sometimes the way the world is doesn't let us get all the same things, get all the things we want at the same time. We can't satisfy all of our desires at the same time. And then we're kind of asked to prioritize our values. What do I care about more right now? Do I care about something that seems to be more for me directly right now, right here? Walk I want to take, a TV show I want to read, a book I want to read, or do I care more about these other things I value? And we're being asked, whenever we think about those obligations, to weigh those values, right, to think about what matters most. If we choose helping that family over somebody more, something that seems more selfish, well, in fact, this is a little not quite paradoxical, but there's something a little funny about this, because if I actually choose to help out my family or my friends or meet some work obligation, isn't there a sense in which I guess actually I care more about that thing than what I was, you know, otherwise thinking I cared about right then? So in a way, then, it's not always a choice between being something that's selfish for me and something that's for somebody else. These are all values I have. I'm choosing between different values I have, and I'm trying to decide which ones I care about most. That sometimes we feel frustrated about our obligations tells us that we don't always, at least in those moments, really embrace the values fully, prioritized over other things, over the commitments we've made previously. But I think there's a way kind of get into a mode of happy obligation filling our obligations happily. Because if we embrace those values, if we actually think about those reasons that we have for the commitments in the first place, and we commit to them, and we say, yeah, this is something I want, this is something I care about, And we're explicit about the fact that we do care about them enough to place them over other things. That we're placing, say, feeding the family as opposed over reading the newspaper in the morning, right? Or whatever else. Well, if you embrace that, say, well, this is what I really care about, then you're doing what you care about. And it might make the word obligation not feel like such a miserable onus, but something more that we actually like. And this is abstract and dreamy, I know. I mean, this is, but thinking of it as an ideal vision that might inspire us to help us sort of embrace the obligations and responsibilities we have, right? You know, I think there might be a way, something about this. And at least I want to frame the rest of the discussion. This is what I was thinking of when I invited Katie, Marissa, and Rita to speak. I said, we've got obligations. We've got responsibilities individually. We've got responsibilities as Unitarian Universalists. We've got responsibilities to lots of different people. And how is it that we feel, how is it that we think about these things? What responsibilities do we have? What do we care about? And how do we feel when we're actually meeting our obligations and our responsibilities? This is what I invited them to talk about today. But before we do that, I want you all to share a little bit with each other what your responsibilities are. I'm going to make you talk to one another for just a couple minutes, all right? I want you to think about what obligations you have in your life, what responsibilities you have. When you hear the word responsibility, what do you think of? And, you know, does it make you feel good or does it make you feel icky? And if right now, sitting in that chair, you now have a responsibility to talk to somebody else, even if you feel icky about it, okay? So you got to do it now for at least a couple minutes. I mean, talk to your neighbor about responsibility, about the values you have, and we'll come back together in a minute.
Thank you. You think so? Okay. I'll just clear my throat because I really need to.
Ahem.
How are you? Good.
Hello.
Hi. I never want to break up a moment of good sharing. Hopefully it can continue after the service with coffee and treats and such, or at least coffee. My name is Katie Kingry Page. Can you hear me properly, or do I need to be? Okay, good. I live in Manhattan with my family. I'm a faculty member at K-State. About 18 months ago, my father was in a crisis. He needed a stable living situation with really adequate care for his health problems, which are very serious and terminal. He moved to Manhattan, and together he and I joined this fellowship. Being responsible for my own frail, elderly person who I love has not been easy, but it's allowed me to grow up in many ways, to take responsibility not just for myself, which I've gotten pretty good at, or my family, my immediate kids and husband, which a passable job there, but also for a weak and ill person, a member of what could be the most voiceless segment of our society. So responsibility. What can I say about responsibility that won't sound Pollyanna-ish? How can I express to you my own deep sense of responsibility, which has definitely been imparted to me by my leftist parents who made labor history, civil rights history, and an ongoing talk of discrimination and abuses of one human by another. They made these constant topics of conversation in our home. How can I express that fulfilling my responsibilities is not pious, sanctimonious, and it's not dreary, at least not usually dreary? I want to propose today that responsibility is not an add-on to our daily operations or a habit of service that we might cultivate, but that it may be something we really can celebrate as the very fabric of all that we appreciate in human culture. This is not my idea. It's actually an idea expressed by the German printmaker, Katja Kollwitz. Are any of you familiar with her work? Oh, good. Great. So you're picturing it, maybe, as I speak. I wish I had images. Katja Kollwitz was an expressionist printmaker. She lived and worked in Germany in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And from her diaries, I'd like to share with you this quote. "Culture arises only when the individual fulfills his cycle of obligations. If everyone recognizes and fulfills his cycle of obligations, genuineness emerges." Kollwitz was a lifelong socialist and pacifist. Her work was motivated by class struggle. She made a famous about the German Peasants' War, a violent revolution which took place in southern Germany in the early years of the Reformation. Peasants who'd been treated as slaves took arms against feudal lords and the church. Kollwitz's son Peter was killed in World War II. As you can imagine, this was a huge blow to her life as a pacifist. Later, after the Nazi regime took power, Kollwitz lost her teaching position and her work was removed from museums, although some pieces that were palatable to Nazis, like images of mothers and children, for some reason, the Nazis appropriated as propaganda. The Gestapo threatened Kollwitz and her husband with removal to a concentration camp, but ultimately her international fame as an artist protected them. They fled from city to city, but they avoided internment. Kollwitz died before World War II ended, of natural causes. To Kollwitz's definition of culture, let's add more general definitions for our consideration. The always trustworthy dictionary.com says that culture is the quality in a person or society that arises from a concern for what is regarded as excellent. Oxford English Dictionary confirms that the Latin root cultura means growing or cultivation. And if we stop and think, we all remember that in biology, the term to culture is to maintain some living thing in conditions suitable for growth. So if you follow my train of thought, I'm echoing Kollwitz, saying that the fulfillment of obligations or responsibility creates culture, allows for growth and excellence. I'm going to return now to a bit of memoir and the significance of responsibility in my own family culture. My father's a writer. He doggedly wrote, doggedly, and sent out his work for decades, publishing hundreds of poems in small press publications in the U.S. and abroad. He impressed upon me slowly over years and through example, not explicitly, the same idea that Kollwitz expressed so clearly, that the creation of culture depends upon individuals fulfilling responsibilities. When I was a tiny kid, I grew up at the foot of a stage in various grassroots arts organizations in Wichita and Kansas City. As I grew older and began to make my own art, my dad's production was always a step ahead, held together by a network of poets and writers, old friends and strangers who were reading, promoting, and publishing one another's work. I'd like to share with you a poem by my father, Tom Page, and I'm going to attempt to play it on this portable device, so we'll see how that goes. Hold on one sec. Let's see. I do want to warn you before I play this poem that it contains some strong language. I'm not sure what good it does for me to warn you. I guess that's so you could cover your ears if you don't want to hear it.
Getting Even with the Dream Killers, for Allen Ginsberg, In Memoriam. April 23rd, 2001. It isn't easy, and it's a waiting game. If you're fortunate, the day will come when one of them falls in your lap. I refer to the uniformed bastards who turn families and young workers back into Mexico at the border. There's the bankers who launder money. They know who they are. And teachers who screw over a kid because there's something about her that they don't like. And all the bigots who have ever screwed over a kid because of race, class, religion, and politics. Conformists, McCarthyites, all the witch hunters, prissy hypocrites, and assholes that they are. Patriarchs who think they can own women's private parts. Women who think all men are sexists. Petty conspirators, they know who they are. Genocidal and political killers. Everyone who has a hand in killing the planet. They know who they are, and one day they'll fall into our hands, and we'll know what to do. We might let them work it off, road work, cleanup, stuff like that, depending on their crimes. We reserve special treatment for those who support genocidal and classist regimes.
Well, I hope you can tell my dad has a very dark sense of humor. And I hope that you will not assume that I'm suggesting that revenge is a Unitarian value, because of course it isn't. My brother Will, who you heard reading the poem, and I, we selected this poem for its dark and ironic treatment of responsibility, and because it evokes images of what you could call anti-culture, quite similar to the dark, darkly realistic and expressionistic etchings and woodcuts of Katja Kollwitz. The poem by my dad hovers somewhere between innocence and cynicism. Obviously, the childlike longing for revenge will never be carried out against those who have sidestepped responsibility and even committed heinous crimes. Using this very, very dark humor, the poem reminds us that we create culture, or we allow for a horrifying vacuum of its absence. I'll leave you with those slightly more uplifting words by Kollwitz. Culture arises only when the individual fulfills her cycle of obligations. If everyone recognizes and fulfills her cycle of obligations, genuineness emerges. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Marissa Larson. I moved to Manhattan almost 2 years ago from the Washington, D.C. area, where I'd lived for 12 years and gotten lulled into a sense of peace that all the people around me were pretty progressive and thought the way I did. And I knew moving back to Kansas was going to be a bit of a culture shock, having grown up here. But I also thought that Manhattan, being a college town, would be my, you know, own little cocoon of liberal and progressive thought and open-mindedness. And so I was a little taken aback and surprised by it not being as progressive as I thought it would be when I got here. And, you know, I kept looking for outlets of people that I could connect with, and I wasn't finding them. And it had been almost, I'd been here for almost a year, And I was still convinced living in Manhattan was the best thing for my son and I, and that I had made the right decision moving back, but I desperately missed my community in D.C., and not just my friends, but just the sense that I could be in town and talk to anybody and not be put down for my thoughts or beliefs. And I also got tired of feeling like I had to hide. You know, people just saying to me very conservative things, assuming that I would think exactly as they did. And that if I spoke up, I was, you know, going to hurt my position or situation in the community, so I kept quiet. And I felt like little pieces of me were just dying every time I had to do that. And I remember, like I said, I'd been here almost a year, and I was confiding with a friend of mine who I knew was progressive and telling her how I felt. And she was like, well, you know, we don't go to Unitarian Universalists because her husband works Saturday nights, so Sunday mornings are kind of their family time. She was like, but, you know, I know for several people who go there, and they're progressive, and I think you would enjoy it. So why don't you just, you know, that might be an outlet for you. And so I came, and it was like I'd found my mothership. it was, you guys were the people that I had been looking for that whole year that I'd been here. And I feel really fortunate that I found you. But now that I have found you, I feel like maybe we have a responsibility to be more vocal and more public that we're here, that we are a lifeboat of progressiveness amongst this ocean of conservatism, because I'm sure there are other people out there that were like me that just want a place where they feel like they can be themselves and talk to people and have intellectually open-minded, stimulating discussions, be they spiritual or secular or philosophical. And so I guess where I feel personally for myself is I'm being more vocal about, you know, proudly, you know, people say, do you go to church? And I'll say, well, I go to the Unitarian Universalists. And sometimes I get the, oh. And sometimes I get the, well, at least you're doing something. because when I first moved here and people would often say, well, do you go to church? And I'd say, no, that was a bad answer. So at least I have an answer now. But I don't think many people who do know about us, I'm not sure they all understand us. And I think there are a lot of people out there who don't know about us. And in my personal experience, I was not looking for a spiritual outlet. I was looking more for a secular, progressive outlet. I appreciate the spiritual outlet. So I think maybe we have a responsibility to be more vocal and more open as a community and as individuals, promoting who we are and what we stand for, because I do think there are more of us out there than we think. Based on getting off Manhattan, I grew up in Hiawatha, and for 6 years I wrote a progressive op-ed piece for our hometown newspaper, and it was amazing the number of progressives that came out of the woodwork to tell me and my parents that they really liked my column. And my mom was really surprised by a lot of the people, because she would have pegged them as conservative, because, again, I think we all hide. We just, you know, go with the flow. We don't open up. And based on my own little, you know, unscientific calculations, my guess is that the progressives in Hiawatha, in that area that read my column, are probably close to 40% or more of the population. You know, a much bigger minority than they thought they were. And, you know, so I think we owe something to the progressives, but we all owe something to the conservatives as well, to let them know that they can't just speak to people assuming everyone's going to think the way they do. I think it's better to help community and dialogue if we can, you know, speak up and say, well, you know, I don't agree with that, or there are community organizations in the area that think differently. And, you know, maybe it would help this big division that we're getting in our society if we all start speaking up more and making people realize that not everyone thinks like them, or not everyone who doesn't think like them is an extreme fringe person. So I guess those are just my 2 cents and what I feel responsible. Now that I have found my own little lifeboat, I want to, you know, throw some buoys out there for other people to also find their lifeboat. Thanks.
Have you ever wanted to do something a certain way and realized that it was something that didn't come naturally to you, that wasn't automatic, that if you were going to make that certain something happen, that you were going to have to work at it, practice it, work for it, foster it, think about it, and be intentional about it? You're going to have to invest emotionally in this, possibly physically. Some examples of that are to be a more positive person. Might apply to some people's New Year resolutions, like go to the gym more, eat smaller portions, make sure dinner is on the table every night when my husband gets home, that's still something I need to work on. So another example for me for communicating positively with is communicating positively with my boys. The environment that I was raised in was very much like, no, don't do this, no, don't do this, no, don't do this, and, you know, evolutions and parenting theory and all that stuff. One of the things that I want to do with my boys is to intentionally be more positive with them, to give them more positive feedback. So, for example, we're in a play group and Carter is playing really nicely with some other kids, you know, like pull him aside and say, Carter, you know, you're doing a great job, you know. He gets this big smile on his face and runs back, and doing things like that, at least in our situation, has limited the number of hair-pulling incidences, biting, you know, things like that. You know, I've definitely seen a direct correlation with being positive with my children. It's not something, again, that comes naturally to me. I have to think about it. I have to, you know, on my way into a playgroup or a situation like that, I have to remind myself, okay, I'm going to pull each of the boys aside once and tell them something positive about the way that they're behaving or what they're doing. You know, there are a couple reasons why I want to be positive with them. I feel as if it's my responsibility as a parent. I feel like the boys feel better about themselves with the positive reinforcement. Hopefully, they will develop the ability to think more positively in different situations. And maybe it will be something that will be more automatic for them relating with their children someday. I also feel like it's the right thing to do. And that any of the negative things that I would associate with you know, taking the time to stop and think about how I'm going to give them positive feedback, all of the benefits outweigh any negatives that I could ever associate with that. So fast forward a little bit to my family is here. We've joined the UU Fellowship here, and I'm working with a group of folks on the communications committee, doing some research. I'm a researcher, so I like to, you know, spend a lot of time online researching. You know, how do other UU fellowships communicate with their members? Are they doing newsletters, websites, Facebook, Twitter, blogs, printed brochures, word of mouth? There's something in the advertising and branding industry that, and I'm sure you guys are all aware of this, word of mouth is your cheapest yet most effective form of advertising, form of branding, form of communicating. When it comes to my fellowship and what I would refer to as my community, I'm scared to death of talking to people about it. You know, it's really hard. Because what do you say? You know, do you you don't want to offend anyone? But I ran into a lot of the things, and my family did a lot that Marissa did too. We didn't have a community here, and we so needed it. It wasn't until One of my fellow mom friends was having a conversation with me one day. Her boys, close in age, again, a lot like ours, playing together, having the typical conversations about behavior and all this stuff. Well, I'd known they were kind of religious because the first time their older boy came to our house, the first thing he said to our oldest son was, "I have a Bible. Do you?" And Carter kind of looked at me and was like, "I don't know what that is, Lonnie." So anyway, so we just kind of used the distraction technique on that one. But anyway, so she and I actually got on the topic of church and community and things like that. And I will admit that at first it made me a little bit uncomfortable, but she was so good at it. You know, she basically was telling me why she loved being where she was. You know, obviously we didn't end up going that route, but she was very, it was a very heartfelt message. She communicated with such authenticity. She didn't give me a lecture on this is what they believe, this is what they do, this is how many times they meet, and that type of stuff. But she was very passionate about where she worshiped. Let's see. So that got me really thinking. What are our beliefs? How do we want to raise our children? And it made us think kind of in a new, made me think in a new way that I had never thought before. Taylor and I had always talked about the fact that we wanted to raise our children in a church atmosphere. And a church meaning more of like a community. We find out now later down the road that would be more of the appropriate definition. But we hadn't quite gotten there yet, and Carter was almost 3 and a half, so we needed to find something. I had had some health stuff going on, a lot of tests and things like that, and we realized that what we needed was our community. We needed a community that we could feel like we were part of, that we could contribute to, that we could walk into and know that our boys would be safe. And that they would talk about, they do talk about wanting to come. They want to come to Sunday school. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, they want to come to Sunday school. Anyway, so that brings me to my conclusion. The UU Fellowship has been a place and a group that my family and I are incredibly passionate about. I like it. We have positive feelings associated with it. And along with that, we feel a responsibility to it. We know that it's something that we want to contribute to. I personally want to be more better at communicating with people the happiness that I've found here. Does it still scare me? Absolutely. But is it scary because it's something that I don't know how to do effectively? Is it scary because I need to be more intentional about maybe seeking out different ways to do it type of thing? I think so. And much like the being positive with my children, I'm willing to make the sacrifices to do that and to make that happen. Because I think that when you realize that something is worthy of you practicing at it and working at it and being intentional about it, you're willing to make the sacrifices. You're willing to take it on as a responsibility and as one that you feel positively about. So in my research for the communications team, one of the quotes that I came across that really was just so powerful, I thought, this is from a blog, a gentleman who writes a Unitarian Universalist blog online, and the article that he had written was about how to attract new members to your UU fellowship. Again, research, kind of doing what other folks were doing. And he says that when new people show up, let them know you're glad they're there. But most importantly, let them know you're glad you're there. Which I think is just so incredibly important. Thank you.
We've left time for people to share themselves, what they feel responsibility for, how they feel about responsibility, what your values are, what you care about. So let's have about 10 minutes of discussion. Tell us what you care about. Tell us how you feel about your responsibilities to those things you care about and how you go about accomplishing them.
I appreciated Marissa's talk very much because I have organized a table of Democrats at Meadowlark, and I think it's very important for Meadowlark residents to know that because it's so Republican in numbers that there are Democrats and that they do have these very long views of responsibility towards their fellow man. They don't say every cent I have is for me, and
I believe that we also have a tremendous amount responsibility towards ourselves, because if we don't take care of ourselves and our own needs, there is no way that we can take on any of the other responsibilities. And sometimes we forget about that, how important that really can be.
Thank you.
I happen to be a Republican, and I feel like I'm way in the minority. But I also know that I wouldn't be a Republican if I didn't believe that they are just as concerned about the poor and the disabled and so forth, but they have different methods of helping them. And so that's the main difference I see, but they care. They have been portrayed time and again that there are selfish people, but they aren't. And so that's why I'm a Republican. I care. I mean, they believe also in helping those who are down and out to gain some self-esteem or self-respect by taking on a responsibility. I mean, a poor mother can clean her house, can see that her children go to school, and on and on.
And everybody is welcome here, and we're open for any kind of discussion about how to accomplish what we want and what we care about and what we value. Thank you.
One of the issues I think that's emerged from this discussion, and it's very clear. Can you hear me? I'm not sure I can hear myself. Is that there's so many trade-offs involved. How do you balance all this? And I think that's where the real challenge is. Elka's absolutely right. You have responsibilities to yourself. We have responsibilities to society. We have responsibilities to to nature. We have responsibilities to the world. But you can't worry about all of that and act on all of that all the time. So where do you set your priorities? I would love to figure out the answer to that question.
Right.
On a side note, not really a side note, but one of the priorities is family. All of us are educated people. We spend years going to universities or years developing ourselves in different jobs to be good at it. I'm a soldier. I have a responsibility to my soldiers. This is one of the talks I give them. We spend weeks and months and years doing classes to learn how to be a good soldier. Well, how does that translate to the family? I'm only going to be a soldier for 20 years, 25 years tops. I want to be married for the rest of my life. How does that responsibility to progress and be good at what I do translate to the family? For us, it's doing marriage counseling, doing couples retreats, doing the little like Love Dare, effective families, things like that. We which is also how you get to work on you and kind of come to your priorities at the same time.
Well, responsibility is a huge thing, and it is a very difficult thing. And I'm thinking about, I think some of you are familiar with the Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes responsibility can overwhelm us in certain situations. In the Bhagavad Gita, which is an extreme example, of course, you know that Krishna is having to go to battle, and that is his responsibility. So, and not only is he going to battle, but his own members of his own family are on the other side. It's an amazing study of responsibility. If you read the Bhagavad Gita, there are many translations into English. I'd highly recommend that. And I would also just like to say that one responsibility I feel that I have in relating to my community, and I mean my whole community, not just the Unitarian Universalist, but the entire community, is to see myself and each other not as a certain party or a certain left or right wing of a certain party, but as people, human beings, that all have the same cares and the same needs. If I can just keep that in my focus, it helps a lot.
Well, as far as being responsible for the fellowship, I can't be on the finance committee. We would be really broke. nor the art committee. But one of the easiest responsibilities for all of us is to come here on Sunday morning. And if you miss, it's so many times, I'm sorry, and I go home and tell people that who didn't come, you should have been there. I know we do have access to electronic stuff now, but it's not like being here with you.
So my husband just spoke, but for me, a responsibility that's important for my family and for myself has been the spiritual responsibility. I grew up Methodist, and for a while, that's what I thought I wanted my children to be raised as. My husband said, let's try the UU fellowship. And surprise, surprise, I actually really liked it. My children love it. And that's my responsibility as a mother and a wife, is the spiritual foundation that I provide to my children. It's a big responsibility. How do I want my children to be raised? What do I want them to believe in? Well, my two oldest children love this fellowship. My husband loves it. I love it, especially coming from a conservative side. I have actually came in very open-minded this time rather than closed-minded, and that's why I've joined, because that's my responsibility to raise my children spiritually, and that's where we agree. And if you agree spiritually, everything else kind of falls into place.
I've been having some interesting conversations lately about responsibility as an employer. I think most of you know I'm pretty liberal-minded, and owning a business in this area is interesting as a liberal-minded person. Marissa stated earlier how people just assume that you are a certain way, and let me tell you how amplified that is when you own a retail business. I was at a meeting that my bank had asked me to come to not too long ago, where they called it a webinar, and it was basically a sales pitch for a book. And then at the end, they asked us to stick around for just a few more minutes, and a very prominent, wealthy accountant spoke to us about how great Sam Brownback is and all these programs that we have coming up thanks to Sam Brownback. And I had to sit there quietly, and I didn't feel comfortable standing up and saying, you guys are full of shit. But that's something I have to do as a business owner regularly. And, you know, as a business owner, I'm also afraid to say my mind as a business and show my liberalism as a business owner, because there are people who will have a cow and tell their friends, oh, you can't shop there. And I'm responsible to my family with that business and to my employees to provide for them. And so you have to be careful around here, especially about displaying liberal ideals as a business owner. It's a really interesting thing. And one of the conversations I had recently regarded employees and being an employer. And I was telling another business owner that, you know, it's my responsibility to set money aside when times are good. We were talking about how sometimes employees will see, you know, the till is full and think, oh, it's time to ask for a raise. And, you know, we'd love to pay more. But there are times when you have to say, you know, times are good right now, but there are times where we have lulls. And so it's my responsibility to put money aside and be able to provide for you the shifts and the hours that you expect during those slow times too, rather than being an employer who just cuts you. And that's a responsibility that I take very seriously. And it's interesting because I know, being in the business community and from my past involvement in the chamber, which I dropped out of, how much of a minority I am there. So it's an interesting responsibility to be in that field. So
let's have maybe one more.
Two more.
Okay, two more.
Hi, I'm Michaela, and I'm just really glad that the UU community as a whole finds it their responsibility to be open and listening to everyone. A lot of times I'm kind of just the person that sits here and listens to what everybody else says. And there's a lot of things I agree with, but you know, if you take everything with a grain of salt and think about it, and you don't always automatically apply a label to somebody, kind of like how Anna was saying, you know, think of them as people who they might all have the same concerns, but they just have different ideas about how to go about it. And it's not always so much, you know, what exactly the end goal is, it's how you get there. But I guess I'm just really glad that, you know, it's not always about what label you apply to anything, it's, you know, what the intent is. And we all have a responsibility to maybe not just look at superficially what you see, but you know, everything behind that and everything that goes into that.
I think something that hearing everybody's comments is thrown into relief for me is that responsibility and obligation are not necessarily synonymous. And while the responsibility and the consequences of your decisions may be established, your sense of obligation is fostered partially on your own personal philosophy and partially on the weight of whatever culture imposes on you. And that your sense of obligation, I think maybe I should say this, as a you, I feel that it is your obligation to examine your sense of obligation, to make sure that it is not necessarily something that is simply being dictated to you by the weight of culture or tradition, but is instead something that you examine yourself, and even if you end up agreeing with it, at least it's then your choice. Maybe that'll take away some of that nagging resentment of that obligation that you mentioned at the beginning.
Thank you. And thank you for all those comments. I know there are more. We're going to have to end. I want to invite you now to sing with us together 1021, and I will point out just one thing about this. Once you get to page 3, here in the middle, you come back to the beginning again for the first two times. Okay, 1021 in the blue hymnals.
our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow. But if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong, then I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Back, please swallow your pride if I have things difficult to borrow, for no one can fill those of your needs that you won't let show. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll hear your load if you just call me. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Now just call on me, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'd understand. We all need somebody to lean on.
Thank you very much. As you leave, reading 7:12, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. This is from Romans. Let's have some coffee and talk.